An engineering researcher at the University of Arkansas has developed an endoscopic microscope capable of producing high-resolution subcellular images of tissue in real time. Tim Muldoon is an assistant professor of biomedical engineering at the U of A. Earlier this week, he stopped by Studio 123 to speak with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda about this fiber optic device, which is portable, reusable, and easily packaged with conventional endoscopes. During their conversation, Muldoon explained that this project, which started back when he was a graduate student, has been a collaborative effort with Dr. Rebecca Richards-Cortum from Rice University, as well as clinicians from MD Anderson and Mount Sinai.
I got this project first when it was only a concept. We had maybe like a very rough prototype that someone had been kind of tinkering around with, and then I took it over. And so we took it from a concept or an idea, tested it out in the lab on more complicated items. So we tested it out just looking on cells on a slide for a while, and then we built up to looking at little pieces of tissue, animal tissue or whatever we could get. And every time we had to, you know, iteratively improve the device until we could get it to a point where we could actually make it transportable and move it into a clinical setting. And so even by today's standards, it feels like that thing was very clunky the first time we brought it over to MD Anderson. It was in this big metal box. It was probably, you know, 2 feet wide and a foot tall or something like that. And I think it weighed about 15 pounds. It's kind of clunky, but it got the job done, and it was nice to actually be able to measure it on, use real patients in the clinic, in a clinical setting, sort of the way that we had envisioned it in the first place. So that was a big step to get there.
So what does the product look like now? Because it's not a prototype anymore. It's an actual microscope that,
right,
like, this is what I would sell to someone. This is something,
right,
that they,
right,
would use. So
it's not quite what I would say a commercializable product yet, but it's at the point where, yeah, it would look like something that maybe a doctor's office would use. Mm-hmm. So we have the entire thing enclosed in a small little box that's maybe the size of a piece of paper, maybe 2 inches tall, and then it runs via a single USB cable that plugs into a laptop. And so the whole thing is internally powered off of a rechargeable battery and that USB cord. And we have a fiber optic bundle that is about 3 feet long and a flexible bundle. So it's its outer diameter is maybe 2 millimeters or so. And that allows us to position by hand or by a mechanical positioner directly onto whatever type of tissue we're looking at.
And so does this work with a regular endoscope, or how does that work?
Right. So this project was also originally envisioned to work as sort of a piggyback technology onto a regular white light endoscope. And so these are things that people, I think, are very familiar with. So things like colonoscopes, colonoscopies, or EGD, which is upper endoscopy. Both of those systems are they're very flexible. Obviously, I think many people are probably familiar with what those things look like, but they incorporate a small channel inside that's a couple of millimeters in diameter. And what that is, it's called the biopsy channel. What clinicians can do is they put a little forceps through that little biopsy channel, and then that allows them to grab a region of tissue and bring it back for microscopic analysis later on. And so when you say you're receiving a biopsy, like that's how they do it, at least in terms of endoscopic approaches. And so our thought was maybe we could introduce this through the biopsy port. And so that was what the Mount Sinai project was back when,
sure,
I was a graduate student. That is a little bit more complicated to start in a new environment. So we're looking at tissue after it's been removed from the body here in Arkansas, in Little Rock, actually. Our collaborators are at UAMS, mm-hmm, in Little Rock down there. And so we're looking at this in a little bit more of a simplified strategy right now to try to examine tumor margins after a tumor has been removed. So the idea is that we can help surgeons to identify where the extent of the diseased tissue is, sort of, you know, in real time, as opposed to having to wait to look at the cells under the microscope. We can kind of give them that information right there in real time.
What about this instrument allows you to do that in real time?
Right. So it provides an image of the actual cellular architecture. So almost the same as what a pathologist would look at under a microscope when they're looking at tissue, you know, high magnification. This provides that sort of information sort of live. We can see that almost at near video rate. So they basically place this little probe about 1 millimeter in diameter, and it gives the clinician a live view of what the cells are looking like at that particular point.
So what do people do right now?
So right now, the standard of care at most tertiary care centers, so like a big medical center like UAMS or MD Anderson, things like that, we use what's called frozen section. And so what they do is they actually cut a piece of tissue that's around the tumor, cut a piece of that tissue out, and then it gets snap frozen in liquid nitrogen. A pathologist has to be present. What they do is they can slice that frozen tissue, stain it very rapidly, and then look at it under the microscope. That process takes 15, 20 minutes maybe to do, and so there's a little bit of a delay in the surgery while the surgeon is waiting to see how those margins turn out to make sure that they got all of the tumor. But also, it requires quite a bit of infrastructure, as you can imagine. You need to have either liquid nitrogen or some sort of way of snap freezing that tissue. And you also need to have someone who's very highly trained in doing that. I can't even do these frozen sections correctly. They're very challenging, I think, yeah, to get a good section that way. And so this device is sort of envisioned as a way of expanding that approach, to expand the way that we evaluate tumor resections. This obviously is it's a relatively inexpensive device. So the total cost of this device is maybe $2,000, $3,000, perhaps plus the laptop, depending on how high end you want your laptop to be. And so I think that's something that we could hopefully in the future perhaps extend to smaller medical centers or more rural areas.
Because the price point is not astronomical.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And it should, in theory, require less highly trained personnel as well to operate.
How are you able to make something that's relatively inexpensive? Because I know some of the machinery at the hospital is hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so you've created this thing that's a couple thousand dollars.
Right. So our approach and my laboratory and overall is focused on optical means of interrogating tissue, imaging tissue or collecting spectra. Optical technologies, I think a lot of people can relate to this analogy, which is what I use in my classes sometimes, is that if you look at your cell phone has a little camera on it, and that camera is, I don't know, 10 megapixels now. Things in the optical imaging world, from the standpoint of sensors, like your cell phone camera, or light sources, LEDs, these things have become like ubiquitous in the last 10 years. And the technology that has driven that has driven it to a point such that the price point of all of those things has come down so low. And so we were able to build this system here at Arkansas. I think we built it, 2 years ago using pretty much the latest technology. And the camera that I purchased, I remember, it's a cube about 1 inch on a side. I think it's like maybe a 4 megapixel camera. So it doesn't have the pixel density maybe of a cell phone camera, but it has a pretty extensive resolution. That thing cost probably 1/10 of the camera that I used back when I was a graduate student, only in 2005, 2006. Mm-hmm. And so you can see how much things have changed just in those 7-8 years. And I think those technologies are continuing to be pushed. And again, I don't think it's a coincidence that we see these things in cell phones and cameras and laptops. And there's a lot of commercial push to get those things advanced. So I think optical technology, it's really come a long way, and it's helped us and helped my field of biomedical optics out a lot as a result of these consumer devices.
You mentioned the benefit of being able to have a picture in real time, so it sort of cuts down, I guess, on surgery time, which, less time less time under anesthesia and stuff like that. What are some of the other benefits of this device?
Well, I would say, so we discussed cost, we discussed the time that it would take, mm-hmm, perhaps to analyze the tissue. I would say also optical technology brings something different to the playing field as well. So there's also been maybe another sort of revolution going on, maybe a little bit less visible, but in the world of nanotechnology and maybe to a broader extent, developing what's called molecular specific imaging probes. And so we see a lot of things now that are available that weren't around, again, 10 years ago, where we have ways of putting optical tags. So things that are either fluorescent or things that are absorbing like an ink or a dye. very, very small molecules that we can target specifically to features or molecular features that are present in certain types of disease. And so in certain types of cancers, we know that certain types of cellular receptors or other proteins are present in that abnormal tissue that are not present in normal tissue. And so using our technology, you could potentially piggyback that on top of our current platform. And so the thought could be that we could use a very specific molecular specific dye and not only tell somebody that their tumor may extend up to a certain region, but also tell them what type of tumor is that? How may it respond to chemotherapy or radiation? What is the prognosis? So again, these are ideas that we haven't tested. These are ideas I'm very interested in pursuing in my laboratory group. But I think that there's a lot of work that could be done in that particular area.
With your partnership with UAMS in Little Rock, is there a specific area that you guys are working with as far as the is there a specific disease or a specific part of the body that you're using your microscope on?
So again, right now we've focused on one particular disease. So we're looking at colorectal cancer. And specifically, like we were speaking about earlier, looking at whether we can use this device to not only map out the tumor margins, but to see if we can detect other regions that may not be apparent by eye that would be worrisome for development of cancer that the surgeon might want to know about. So if we see another nodule or another spot on the on the colon that looks, you know, maybe benign, maybe malignant, this is a way to sort of rapidly determine whether or not that region should be resected. And that right now is where we're at. That's sort of our active, you know, protocol. What I'd like to do is move forward and ask a little bit more of a clinical question. So I'm interested in inflammatory bowel disease and a lot of people who have something called ulcerative colitis, which is a type of inflammatory bowel disease, are at increased risk for developing colon cancer. And so what happens is they often undergo, unfortunately, a prophylactic colectomy, which means they remove their colon before they develop signs of cancer. And so my thought is if we can get enough of those types of patients and perhaps screen them with this type of device, maybe this will help determine a more appropriate means to figure out whether somebody needs that resection or perhaps when they should get that resection. Again, that's going to take probably several years to acquire enough data to be able to do that. I'm not sure that this device is even capable of that yet, but that's something that I think would be a nice use for this type of work. More broadly, I'm trying to expand into other areas too. So we have other projects going on, and I have a few very enthusiastic collaborators at UAMS that are very interested in helping me find the right people to work with. I just put in a couple of proposals looking at lung cancer for other types of devices that we're building in our lab. So it's been a very exciting time. It's been very busy. We're coming up on the end of the semester, and so there's lots of things going on here. But it's nice to have some enthusiastic colleagues in pathology and surgery over there at UAMS that are interested in getting our research projects up and running.
So what's next for you, I guess, in the immediate future as far as this device is concerned?
Right. So this device, we have a grant from the NIH right now to pursue a modification to the device, basically. So what we're trying to do is expand the device from being able only to look at superficial cells and epithelium. So what we've done in the past is we place the device in contact with the tissue, and it provides nice images of the cells that are at the very surface. And we've shown that actually is fairly diagnostically helpful. It does correctly tell you whether or not there's cancer present. But it's not able to interrogate the deeper layers of tissue. And so one of the analogies that I think about is when we're looking at esophagus or colon or even skin, it's a stratified layer. So if you imagine like the Grand Canyon, you have like the layers on top and then you've got deeper layers underneath, right? Cancer in epithelial tissue usually arises at the basal layer and starts to work its way up. And that's because that basal layer is the layer of cells that's actively dividing, and then that's what replenishes the layers above. So the cells that are actively dividing are the ones that have a risk of becoming cancerous. And so one of the things I'm interested in is, can we detect that early dysplasia at those deeper layers? And right now, with the way that the system is configured, you know, we only see the later effects. We've only seen those cells as they've already pushed up to the top. So what this this particular grant is, this project that we're doing, is looking at whether we can use a separate wavelength of light. So instead of looking at blue light, we're looking at red light. And instead of taking an actual image of cells, what we're looking at is we're trying to measure how the light scatters back into and out of the tissue. And our hope is that if we can measure how well that light scatters in and out, that'll tell us something about what's going on at those deeper layers. And so earlier we talked about the advancements in molecular dyes or molecular-specific contrast agent type projects. I think this is something that would go very well or work very well with this light scattering method. And so we're trying to develop both of those types of imaging modalities at the same time.
That was Tim Muldoon, Assistant Professor of Biomedical Engineering at the University of Arkansas, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda earlier this week. For more from this conversation, including how long it might be before you see this device in your doctor's office, you can listen to an audio extra at ozarksatlarge.com.